United States against Sanchez. Mr. Merlinski.
Good morning, Justice Easterbrook, Bauer, and Kane. I represent Julio Sanchez.
Been promoted.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have three issues for your review here today.
I've got one before you start. Who owned the truck?
Who owned the truck?
Yeah.
In which the seizure was made? As far as I know, Your Honor, my client did not own the truck.
Now, what standing does he have to complain about the search?
Your Honor, he doesn't have standing on the search, but rather what we're doing is we're challenging the applicability of the federal sentencing guideline and the enhancement, that is, the enhancement for an active use of the firearm when in fact, there's a drug offense going on. Specifically, I want to point the court's attention to United States versus Wyatt. And this is really an argument based upon the language within 2K2.1B5 and section 924C1. Now, our whole argument...
Excuse me.
Yes, sir.
I withdraw the question.
Yes.
Never mind. Oh. Go ahead. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm a jump ahead of myself.
Thank you, Your Honor. Basically, our claim...
Too fast.
Okay, I'll slow down. I'm sorry.
The guy, what you're saying is that the gun in question was not used in the crime.
That's
correct. It was, for practical purposes, a marker. That is to say, an IOU, a hold it. It's a pawn.
I'm not even saying that. In fact,
it was given for sale, wasn't it, for drugs?
Your Honor, I don't believe that's the way it was used.
How was it used?
It was used specifically by the buyer of the drugs to procure... the drugs. It wasn't used by my client.
No, I know. Was it used, however, as a quid pro quo, that is, that he got to keep the gun for the thing, or did he use the holding the gun for purposes of...
Your Honor, I believe that the record suggests that he was holding the gun, and the government argues that it's collateral, that is the use that my client employs, and I disagree with that.
It wasn't collateral?
No, Your Honor.
What was it, a sale?
Your Honor, specifically, he was holding the gun, as in Westmoreland, when the agent introduced the firearm into the transaction. He did that in order to enable the transaction. And as the court noted in that case, there was no use of that gun. Same with our case.
His use, the enable the transaction, is for the sale? Is it the consideration for the transaction, or was it being held?
As this court has found, that's our view
no,
of it.
No, I'm talking about, I'm not talking about, as this court has said, I want to know from your point of view, in this case, it was used as
consideration
for the transaction itself.
It was, nothing more, nothing less, Your Honor.
So it is not in pawn.
That is, no, we do not take that position.
I don't understand why any of this is relevant. The guideline refers not only to use, but to possess.
Correct.
Whether or not the gun was used in connection with the transaction, surely it was possessed in connection with the transaction.
Your Honor, I'd like to, and you're absolutely right. If, in fact, we get over the hump, that is that there is no active use, we go on to possession. That's right. And as our view on that would be, the possession is no possession at all in that I equate...
No possession at all?
Well... The possession is the same possession as was in Westmoreland. That is, there was no active use of the gun in the possession.
No,
linked.
Look, the whole point of writing down possess or use is to say you don't have to have active use. It's enough to have it in your hand. That's what possession means.
Mm-hmm.
Your client had it in his hand.
So did the individual in Westmoreland. He had possession of the gun. He didn't have active use of the gun. And specifically, the gun was found in his apartment wrapped.
That's my point.
Okay.
You can possess something without using it. That's why the guideline says use or possess.
And I would find...
You're relying on cases under the statute, the Bailey line of cases.
That's correct.
The statute does not contain the word possess. That was the critical point in Bailey, that it said use, but it did not say possess.
And our argument, Your Honor, is, again, we wouldn't agree with that interpretation. We would be saying what we have is a factual scenario that's the same as in Westmoreland. Yeah. And if, in fact, you equate the language...
Didn't you waive the whole thing?
Your Honor, specifically, I have that other problem because counsel below prepared for that sentencing, so I am arguing a very limited record. I would argue, Your Honor, there was submissions made by my client to go ahead and proceed under that issue. I understand those difficulties that we have there. I think specifically he does have an argument that he did present to the court. Now, the court did not act on it, but it was something that the court noticed, and I believe that those line of arguments are in the addendum and within the argument at the sentencing. However, that is the argument in and of itself. If there are any other questions on that, I think you understand where I was going with that. But more importantly, I want to go on to issues 2 and 3, if I may. As it relates to giving him a two-point enhancement because the gun was stolen, what happened in the district court is, as judges you're aware, basically what we had is a testimony from a Dane County law enforcement officer indicating that he did a weapons check on the serial number of the gun, found it was stolen, boom, we get the enhancement. Specifically, we take issue with that because nowhere within the report, which is in our appendix in our brief, is a serial number referenced in that April 19, 2003 robbery, that home invasion. And so what we have here is we have a Dane County sheriff doing a weapons check throughout the entire county. The ATF agent has been taken out of the equation because the addendums indicate that he was tried to be reached in reference to that issue. They were never able to go ahead and prepare any kind of opinion from him. Specifically, my argument here is, yes, the government can rely on hearsay at sentencing, absolutely. But it has to be reliable hearsay. And the police reports indicate that there's no serial number. There is no connection of the serial number to that gun. And absent that, we can't look at that evidence as reliable hearsay. I understand the government's argument. We'd be in court forever. It'd be like another trial if we had to go ahead and produce the people who, that lost the gun, or the agent, or the police officer that wrote the report. But we don't have even the basics of the serial number in the report. So how can we proceed upon it and then enhance his sentence by two levels? Last, I wanted to get to this issue of criminal history points. As it relates to the disorderly conduct and bail jumping that was under the deferred agreement, I just wanted to point out to the court that there were two separate deferred prosecution agreements. And I know what the court is going to say. Counsel, it's 16 months. What are you talking about? If you take a look at the docket sheet, Your Honor, it says it's extended. I understand that. Our argument is what happened truly in that first offenders program is nothing. He didn't perform under the contract. It was terminated, and then he executed. So we have terms of 10 months. We have a break in terms of 6 months. I'm saying that a literal reading of that particular federal sentencing guideline requires him to be under supervision for 1 year. I'm saying the government has not proved that. You can't go ahead and count it. It's two different contracts. A real quick point on that, the contracts do not specify when they end and when they begin. All we have is that he executed a contract and he completed it. But we don't have the termination of the first contract. So I don't believe that they proved that point. Secondly, the court is well aware of my arguments, I'm sure, that I try to present as it relates to retail theft being the equivalent of an insufficient funds offense. The only difference is the trespassory taking. And if, in fact, the court goes ahead and takes a look at the factors in Harris, in which the court can go ahead and can equate the two offenses, we're asking, obviously, that it be added to that offense. So I would like to go ahead and reserve the rest of my argument time for rebuttal if there's no questions.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Certainly, counsel. Mr. Graver.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Dan Graver. I represent the United States. I was not the trial counsel down below. The first issue that I'd like to address, Your Honor, has to do with the four-point enhancement under 2K2.1B5. As the court correctly noted, the defendant waived this argument. In front of Judge Shabazz, the defendant had made two pro se objections to the PSR. At the time of sentencing, his counsel specifically stood up in front of Judge Shabazz and said, Your Honor, talk with my client. We move to withdraw these objections. That particular, those two objections had to do with the stolen weapon objection and the possession of the firearm in connection with another felony offense objection. Those were withdrawn. That means waiver, Your Honor, and that precludes appellate review in this case. We pointed that out in our brief, Your Honors, and there was no reply brief by the defense addressing that issue. So that's our first argument as to the 2K2.1B5 argument. The second argument, as the court acknowledged, is that possession is an issue in this case. It doesn't have to be use in the Bailey active employment. We do argue in our brief, Your Honors, though, that not only is there the possession, but there also is use in the sense that it's used as collateral. There was no, he traded a half ounce of cocaine for that sawed-off shotgun. There was no way that he was going to give that half ounce of cocaine without getting something. The person that was buying the cocaine didn't have cash, so he gave the defendant the sawed-off shotgun. The defendant, in his plea colloquy with Judge Shabazz during the plea, Judge Shabazz asked him about the shotgun, and he said, I was using it, I exchanged it for cocaine, and I held it as a pawn. I used it as collateral. He specifically said that. He had it. That shows his possession, his dominion and control over that weapon, and that he had it for that time period. The second issue, Your Honor, I'd like to address is the stolen weapon and the shotgun being stolen, whether Judge Shabazz committed error in finding that it was stolen. He did not. The defense is arguing that somehow the government is relying on hearsay, on a police report that's hearsay and that that's unreliable. They made that argument down below, and Judge Shabazz said, let's hear some testimony. The government put the case agent
on the
stand.
His beef is on the reliability of the evidence.
Correct. On the reliability of the police report.
Right.
So what we did is we put Detective Johnson on the stand. We asked her, did you do the search? Yes. Did you find the shotgun? Yes. Is this the serial number? Yes. Did you run an NCIC check on the computer to see if it was stolen? Yes. What did it do? Came back that it was stolen out of Verona. And we had produced that Verona police report. And the defense then argued, the defense didn't cross-examine the detective. Now on appeal, they say, well, it was unreliable hearsay and we didn't have enough time to prepare. Well, the PSR objections, it was all in the PSR objections. Well, 2 weeks before, they had plenty of time to prepare and make those arguments. The criminal history point argument, Your Honor, as to the deferred prosecution, it was 17 months that he was on supervision for deferred prosecution. The PSR correctly notes that he started on January 8th of 01, and it went until June 26th of 02. There was no termination. They put into the record that there were these two prosecution agreements and that the first one was terminated. You will find no evidence of that. In fact, you will find, if you look at the second contract, it says contract extended. It's an extension of the first one. They last 17 months. That supervision is enough to make it includable under 4A2.1. As to the last issue on the retail theft, Your Honor, that one is properly included. They try to make the argument that shoplifting is the same as passing a bad check. This court in United States versus Harris directly took that on, directly said they are not the same. And the reason they're not the same is because in shoplifting, you've got the theft. You're taking something. In an NSF check case, you're not taking anything. You're just committing fraud by passing that bad check. And because there's two separate elements, as this court has found, they're not the same, and therefore petty larceny or shoplifting is not one of the excludable misdemeanors under 4A1.2. That's all I have, Your Honors, unless you have any other questions.
Thank you, Mr. Graber. Anything further, Mr. Smirlinski?
As it relates to the government's argument on the reliability of the evidence, we have a huge problem here. And the problem is that prior to this...
I don't have any problem at all. Somebody...
Okay. Well, the problem I think exists.
No.
We have a report that's turned over to the defense the day of sentencing that indicates that now this deputy went ahead and did the proper check to see if the weapon was stolen. This was not provided in the PSR, as the government would have you believe. So this was 11th and a half hour evidence. Secondly,
it wasn't in the PSR that it was a stolen weapon?
The issue had been raised originally, Your Honor. What had happened was there was a zero point assessment for a stolen weapon. Then that changed because all of a sudden we had a Verona police report, which incidentally was not testified to by that officer. That's a Dane County deputy testifying to that report. That report does not have a serial number in it. They don't make the connection. As it relates to the deferred prosecution agreements, they're before the court, and nowhere in those agreements. In fact, I should be very careful when I say they're before the court. They're not before the court in form, because neither party is able to get a hold of that particular contract. That is an animal of the deferred prosecution unit in Dane County. But the government has the burden to prove that it was a continuance supervision. They can't. They're looking at the notes in the record. That is not an order, nor in the order does it say that he was on supervision for 17 months. Your Honors, I appreciate your time and listening to my arguments. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.